This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Liv and Lynn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Many of us have durians on our minds right now, it being durian season and all. And according to sellers, the right weather conditions have produced triple the usual yield this year. And in spite of the pandemic, we still see many stalls selling these glorious fruits, and many sellers have started selling online as well. But for the Orang Asli from Ulu Guruntum in Perak, setting up roadside stalls and pivoting online to sell their durians weren't options readily available to them. Tons of their durians ended up being wasted due to circumstances beyond their control, but that is until now. Thanks to some help from friends, they've managed to sell durians through a direct sales initiative using open online tools. So I'm going to find out more about this from academic Roz Hussein, who has been one of their ardent supporters and who's been helping them through this difficult time. Welcome, Roz. How are you today?
Hi, good afternoon.
Well, thank you for joining me today, Roz. You know, we did catch up with you last year. This was in March. Gosh, just when, you know, all hell broke loose, my colleagues, caught up with you. We were talking then about how villagers from 6 Semai settlements in Ulu Guruntum over in Gopeng, at that point, they were protesting against a mini hydro plant project that would have affected their ancestral lands. If you can just give us some brief updates on what's happening there, but also, I guess, you know, just remind us how it is that you became involved with the Orang Asli in Ulu Guruntum.
Yes, so I started getting involved because some mutual friends told me that these Orang Asli needed some support and some help, and would I be willing to give my time to go visit and chat with them and see what they need help with. That was how it just started. It was absolutely informal. It was just a friend bringing me up there. And when I met them for the first time and found out all the things that they were suffering with, I said, it's impossible. You cannot walk away and not volunteer to help, because it was sad. The first time the story was sad. They lost some land, and the land had been destroyed by bulldozers, including their cemeteries. And so, you know, with human bones and remains kind of just unearthed by these bulldozers, you don't walk away from that. You just cannot walk away from something like that and not have your heart telling you got to help these people. So that's how I started. It's just purely one incident.
And, you know, you've been finding that was the main incident, of course, and that is still ongoing, unfortunately. You know, that case is still ongoing and is going to keep going on, unfortunately, for quite a while more. But in the meantime, you know, in the interim, you've also been involved in assisting them in other ways as well, if I'm not mistaken. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, you know, one of the side effects from all this stress that they have, you know, you cannot help solve the bigger problems for them immediately. The court case and the developers, this is going to keep going forever, right? Well, it seems like forever, because when they started, their kids were young, and now some of them, their kids already grown up. I mean, it's taken that long. Yeah. But in the meanwhile, how do you help them deal with everyday life? How do you help them deal with stress, with real life issues? Like, you know, people just say, oh, they should better themselves. They should go and take some courses and learn how to do different things. But if they take courses, who's going to babysit the kids while they're taking courses? Or if they've already suffered all kinds of trauma, how do they get help? I mean, you know, never mind Orang Asli, even like city folk. I mean, we don't really have a very good mental health care system in our country, right? So I began by just making friends with them. And like last year, we had an art therapy session for them where the women and children, you know, we knew that they were having some very, very serious stress levels and anger management issues. But they didn't know where to go. They didn't know how to get help. And I'm not a clinical psychologist, but I have done some work with other Indigenous peoples in the U.S., actually. And so art therapy was something that I learned from my previous position when I was working in the U.S. And we did an art therapy session for the Ulu Guruntum Orang Asli, and it was incredible. You know, grandmas and grandpas and kids. And some of them are illiterate. They can't read and write. but they can tell stories. And so, you know, we had people coming up and drawing their stories and sharing with us their woes, you know, the things that hurt them, and they've no way of bringing out those stories because it's too sensitive and it's too sad. But anyway, that was a very successful session. We covered five topics. The first one was human rights. Second one was orang asli rights specific. Mm-hmm. The third topic was it was in Malay. So the first one was hak manusia. The other one, hak asasi. The second one was which is human rights. Second one was hak orang asli, which is the indigenous people rights. And then there was alam, which is nature. That means what are the things that are happening in their environment that is destroying their lives. And then the fourth one was infrastructure, you know, kebudayaan asas. So asas was the fourth topic. And then the last one, we just simply called it X. X for, you know, things that are just too sensitive that nobody wanted to talk about. And that's when we found out, you know, the social ills that they have to deal with, anger management, violence, rape, alcoholism, suicide. You know, these are all side effects because of the stress levels that they face. We still can't solve these things, but, you know, they found a way to express themselves through the art therapy. Mm-hmm. They discovered that, you know, they can have a voice, whether they are housewives in the kitchen or whether they are grandparents, grandmas, grandpas who are illiterate. They found their voice through drawing. And that really helped. So from there, then I kind of got even more involved with them because they realized, hey, you know what? We don't need to wait for an NGO. We don't need to wait for some government institution. We can just do things together as individuals, you know, whether it's individuals from the cities, like me and my friends, we're just individuals getting together to help, or individuals amongst the orang asli, because, you know, they also have their committees and jawatan kuasa this and that and whatever, right? So politics happens everywhere, right? Whether it's in parliament or whether it's in the orang asli, there's politics there too. But, you know, the point is don't wait for these groups, because they're busy doing bigger things, and as little small individuals we can help each other. And so in the last 2 years, just amongst individuals, and now it's become a larger group, and so it's no longer individual because there's a large group of people amongst the orang asli who realize that they need to better themselves and learn new things, and that if the system doesn't help them or the system isn't accessible to them, then we make our own system. So we've been jerry-rigging using free online tools, you know, I mean, Google tools, they're free online. To give you an example of one of the successes earlier this year, they won an injunction court case because just a bunch of individuals, they, you know, every week they would get together with me, and with their zero internet access, they'd like ride their motorbikes down the mountain, look for some internet access somewhere, and we'd connect. And they learned how to do documentation using online tools, taking pictures, putting their GPS markers in, and then, you know, learning how to collaborate amongst themselves because they don't have computers or anything, just using their smartphones. And I taught them how to use the cloud, store their stuff in the cloud, so that, you know, when one person rides the motorbike to go down to get internet, and then maybe another person goes down on another day, that data can be shared using the cloud, right? So that they don't have to all be in the same place at the same time. So long story short, they learned how to do this. And that information, we managed to get it out to the volunteer lawyers. We have some pro bono lawyers who have been helping the orang asli. Fantastic, wonderful job. Thank you to them. And they won the court case for that injunction. So the developers had to stop work. But, you know, that was a small win. The larger picture is, you know, there's four more developers and this bigger project still going on. But it was a wonderful motivation for them. They saw how the power of learning can help them help themselves. And so that made them really self-motivated to not just, you know, wait. Instead, they started becoming really proactive. And so it's like a weekly thing now. They'll call me once a week and say, this is the update for this week. And they'll send their report, upload their report in the cloud. It's really cute, right? I mean, these are middle-aged to elderly people. We're not talking about the young generation. We're talking about those in their 50s and in their 60s learning again. And it's amazing that, you know, they're willing to learn again and they can. That's the amazing part. Is they can. And then, you know, last week, it was not even a week ago, only 6 days ago, during the regular weekly meeting with me online on the phone, I said, so how are you doing this week? And, you know, the guy was saying, oh, well, not so good today. Mm-hmm. And I said, why? Oh, you know, yeah, I had to throw away 200 durians. I'm like, what? Oh, no, don't throw it away. You know, those of us in the cities, we can't get our hands on really nice, organic, non-chemical durians, right? And I said, what happened? Why did you throw away your durians? And he said, you know, in years past, they would always sell the durians to the middlemen down in the market. Like they collect their durians on foot, right? Imagine these guys are like up in the mountains, going from tree to tree, collecting these durians on foot, and then they collate it and put it into the motorbike. And then they ride their little motorbike downtown, and then they sell it to the middleman. And in the past, they used to sell it for like 5-6 ringgit, maybe sometimes 7 ringgit per kilo. And then these middlemen would then market it, ship it to KL, and of course there's a markup price. So in KL, it would be anything from 12 to 20 ringgit per kilo. But this year, because of the weather and, you know, whatever, climate change, the durian season was a real bumper season. So there's a lot of durian, there's a glut. Yeah. And because of that, the middleman, and because of our wonderful EMCO, nobody can move, blah, 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 right? Nobody can drive. Not all lorry drivers have permits. Permits to cross the boundary, right? To cross from one state to another. So the middlemen have been forced to bring the price down, but down to like 1 ringgit and 50, or some, you know, that day when my friend called, he said he was offered 50 cents per kilo.
Oh my God.
I mean, yeah. And that doesn't even cover his gas money. Yeah. You know, so he said, you know, he couldn't even afford to bring the durians back up the mountain. He had to throw them away. He had no choice. And so I said, please, please, please don't throw any more. Tomorrow, same time, come down the mountain again and I will have a solution for you. I said, whatever it is, we will find a solution. So overnight, I had 24 hours to go and mobilize. We had friends and whatever. And I thank all the volunteers who helped. We jerry-rigged. We just used normal like Google Forms, whatever. I mean, totally. We don't have an app developer. We don't have anyone who has any knowledge to know how to build an app to help do this online sales. So we just are using a normal spreadsheet, a normal Google Forms, and manually handling the online sales. But that was like 6 days ago, and at 500 kilos per day.
Wow.
So we are selling retail direct online just through Facebook and word of mouth at 6 ringgit per kilo. And we're giving the orang asli 4 ringgit per kilo. So, you know, they are getting a fair share, much better than what the middlemen are able to give them. And the 2 ringgit actually doesn't even cover the transportation cost, because we're shipping it all the way from Gopeng all the way to KL, Klang, Shalam, even down south to Bangi, Putrajaya. And Ipoh, of course, is nearby. And the manpower is all free. We're all volunteers. There are people who are taking leave from work just to help them.
That's
so it's really heartwarming, and the sales have been good. We have no problem getting buyers. We have no problem getting durians. What we have a problem is the in-between thing, because we only have one vehicle. So our limitation of selling is because we only managed to get one volunteer who was willing to let us rent the truck. A pickup truck. At cost. But, you know, and that is our limitation, is the actual, how do we deal with the logistics? So, but we're still thankful. And I don't know how long we can do this. It's really taxing on our time. But, you know, if anybody would like to help, do contact us. We need drivers. We need vehicles. If anyone is willing and able to say, look, I've got a pickup truck and I'll volunteer myself and my pickup truck for a day or 2 days, whatever, we'll slot you in on the delivery schedule so that we can sell more durians.
And do these drivers, I mean, let's say anyone's listening and they're thinking of volunteering, I mean, would they need special permits? You know, would you know what that process is like, just so it's easier for them to understand as well?
Well, we're really thankful. One of my former schoolmates, she owns a company, and I'll give a little pitch for her company because she's actually giving a lot of help. Nomad Adventure in Gopeng. We are using their pickup truck now, and they are able to get, because they have an office, they have offices in both Perak and in KL. Uh-huh. So we are able to do that cross-boundary deliveries. So if there's anybody who would like to contribute their time and their vehicle to this noble cause, do contact us and we'll find a way. What we've also been doing is that we've had people delivering to KL and then volunteers in KL who've taken bulk shipments and then they become our legs over there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there's also that opportunity to do that because then the truck can do multiple loads, bringing it into Selangor if the people in Selangor KL don't have the permits to cross the border.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Roz Hussain. She's an academic and she's actually telling us about what's happening over in Ulu Geruntum, you know, with the Orang Asli folks there. Before this, she was telling us about all the different issues they're facing and also how she's helping them in her own way. And, you know, we're talking now about this durian glut, unfortunately, that has also affected their livelihoods. Coming out after this quick break, we're going to discuss some ways of moving forward, you know, from the situation and how we can better improve it in the long term, especially. Keep it right here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today is Roz Hussain. She's an academic and she's also one of the volunteers helping the Orang Asli community over in Ulu Geruntum. This is over in Gopeng in Perak. Before the break, Roz was sharing how, you know, she and some of her friends, you know, not part of any NGOs, not part of any organizations, just, you know, concerned individuals who made friends with the Orang Asli in Ulu Geruntum are helping them through some very difficult times. I think, you know, one of the things that I took away from what you said, Roz, was that Orang Asli are not a homogenous group. You know, they've got very different needs, very different, you know, issues that they're facing. You know, there's no one size fits all solution, is there? And through all the work that you've been doing with the Orang Asli, especially the Orang Asli in Ulu Geruntum, what help is actually, I guess, for lack of a better word, most helpful to them? I mean, donations maybe, but what help would actually really benefit them as a community and for the long term?
So while donations and cash and food giveaways are useful, but they only help the immediate need. What the Orang Asli really need is they need the ability to feel and to produce output on their own. And in such a way that they don't have to step away from their lifestyle. I give an example. There are a lot of programs that are well-intended, re-education processes and, you know, workshops and all kinds of programs that are sponsored by the government and NGOs to give skills. But the problem is these programs are not holistically designed. So if a person goes to this Bengkel, who's going to babysit the kids? And the time that they take to attend this workshops and courses, you know, sometimes it takes them away from being able to earn income. So who is going to earn the income while they're away taking these courses? And then once they have the course, they have this certificate in their hand, how are they going to get funding as capital to go and do stuff? Financial literacy is not taught. So the kinds of things that they need really are not your standard needs of what a typical child in an urban home would, you know, you go to school, we have our education system, but it's a national curriculum. It's designed for the average Malaysian kid. Yeah, it may have been suitable way back, what, 60 plus years ago when Malaysia was first a country, a young country. We needed something standardized, but we are matured now. The country's matured. I think we need to realize that one size does not fit all. And it's really clear that the education that is being given is well intended, but it does not really help the orang asli. Another example is the group that I'm working with in Ulu Gruntum. There is a school. There's a school up in their kampung, in their village. It's a primary school, and it's very well kept. It's a really nice school. Good teachers, great principal. You know, I know I've spoken to them and done some work with them before, but the concept of having kids go to that school, let's rethink this. The orang asli live way up in the mountains. Just sending a child to this school, for some of them, takes an hour. Some of them, even longer than an hour. And they don't even have transport. They borrow somebody's motorbike to send the kids to school. So what the government has done, which is good, they created dormitories.
Right.
But then when I found out the dormitories, oh my God, this is primary school and kindergarten. So 6-year-old kids are living away from their parents. Mm-hmm. I cannot imagine giving up my child at the age of 6, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So we have to rethink. One size does not fit all. I mean, the message that I hope we can get out of this interview here is that we need to rethink solutions that work on the ground. So whether it's giving a course to the orang asli to learn how to do entrepreneuring skills, but then having to ensure that there's babysitting involved as well, that there's some kind of stipend so that they can still pay for the food on the kids' table while the parents are gone away to do some workshop, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of holistic thinking that we need to start doing. And so that's why the durian online sales that we're doing now, it's not about just selling these durians for them. I'm not doing this as a business endeavor. I'm not a business person. I don't like doing sales. I started doing this because my friends, the orang asli, need to learn how to run their own business. And so, you know, when we got together and said, let's try this, the intent wasn't just to help them sell the durians, but the intent is you're going to hold their hands. I mean, we're not online salesmen ourselves. You know, we're just individuals in our own careers, just taking some time off and learning how to help these guys sell online. And by us learning and them learning alongside, we're hoping that eventually they will learn enough that they can take over someday. And I hope it'll be soon. And you know, by the time this season is over, which is like what, durian season only lasts 2 months anyway. Yeah. You know, those of us who are volunteering, we can't give up our vacation time and our personal time indefinitely either. So having a long-term supply of volunteers who are able to be teachers, to teach and nurture and coach and hold the hands. And you know, it's not just about giving a workshop. It's about motivating each other to say, it's all right. It was really hard today selling to, you know, 42 buyers and driving the truck, you know, all day long and doing a relay, you know, delivery service. It's hard. It's hard. So it's not just about the sales. It's about showing the orang asli, what does it actually take to run a business, to start an entrepreneurial business, and to hold their hand and be with them together. And that will help them learn, because just sending them to a class doesn't do anything.
Yeah. And I know that you were part of, you know, you did mention that you used to work in the US, and I know that you were part of something called the Native American Roots Program for about 8 years, right? And if I'm correct, the methodology there was of empowering Indigenous people with, as you've been talking about, you know, long-term sustainable skills. And I guess that's not quite happening here in Malaysia. I mean, you know, tell me about your experience working on that program.
I worked in the US for a long time, about 15 in total, maybe about 18 years. Mm-hmm. And of that, I was very privileged to be involved in a grant fund. This was funded by the U.S. government, and it's still ongoing. There are many programs. This is just one of many. So that program, what they did was they reimagined what education should be like for the Indigenous people in the state of Nebraska. Okay. And what they did was they partnered up, they meaning the national central government partnered up with the state government, and through the state university, which has a very strong teacher education program, they created a teacher training program that was purely online and hybrid and blended. So the difference is online means it's fully, you know, using a computer and you're not physically there. Blended means some parts they'll be face-to-face or in-person instruction. So either the professors go to the reservations or the Indigenous people there, the Native Americans there, were brought to the campus. You know, we provided transport for them to come to the campus once or twice a year. And the professors would go to the reservations also a few times a year. But in the meanwhile, it was the rest of it was offered online. And that was the piece that I was involved in. My role was as the online instructional designer. Okay. So what, in a nutshell, what we did was we educated either parents or young adults who, you know, wanted to become teachers, but they have no access to mainstream degree programs. So we redesigned the degree program so that it could be done over a period of, you know, usually whatever a degree is, 4 years, whatever. So instead, we broke it up into modules. And so it became a lifelong endeavor. I mean, some people took maybe 8 years to get the degree. Some people took longer. But in the meanwhile, they took it sort of in modules, and then they became para-educators. That means they were assistants in the classroom. Yeah. So, you know, it's not just removing the bright young people from the village and taking them away from the village and putting them into university, but instead it's bringing the university to them so that they can continue being with their families and continue being with the children in the schools, and still providing relevant education to the kids in the village itself. So that's the first step, is that designing a program that fits into the lifestyle of the Indigenous people, and that the people involved are the Indigenous people. So it's not just city folk from New York, you know, getting a degree and then flying into the village and teaching the villages. And you know, the culture, you know, there's a culture shock. But we still had teachers who were interested in helping the Native Americans. So we had urban city folk who gave up, you know, working in a big school, big city, to go into the reservations to teach there. In fact, one of my graduate students is now the academic dean in one of these Native American colleges. Wow. In the reservations. Yeah. And so that's the first step, is to redesign the education system so that it's not one size fits all. It actually fits that particular group of Native people. Then the second part is the methodology of teaching. So homework and taking exams works for urban kids, right? We know what SPM is in Malaysia, right? But when you're dealing with a culture where their life is so different from our everyday life, you know, they take an hour just to hike out from their house to the main road, some of them, right? So 1 hour to us is a long time, and if you're in a classroom, in a normal, let's say, form five classroom or whatever, 1 hour you'd have two lesson plans already. Yeah. So it doesn't work for them. So the methodology of teaching and learning has to be reinvented for them. So I give you one example. I worked very hard to get the state board to agree to changing the assessment method for the exams, or the final exam method for the teacher training program. And so instead of saying a particular subject had to do final exams and you know, things that are just not relevant to the Native Americans there, We had them learn how to use online tools. And if the objective was to demonstrate that they knew how to do whatever XYZ type of competencies, the skills, they would just have to photograph themselves or video themselves doing the live actions, or they photograph the products that they produce. And then that is evidence-based learning. So instead of doing exam-based learning, where it's a standard set of questions, you know, we retrained the professors who were teaching those classes where the students were trying to become a teacher, right? So we retrained the professors to redesign their curriculum to allow for evidence-based learning using portfolio method.
Wow.
So it was, you know, a combination of photographs and audio recording where they would give testimonials that I demonstrate, I understand this concept because, and then, you know, they'd record their voice. So it was creative ways of doing assessments. So thinking out of the box and getting the buy-in from the academicians and the buy-in from the state government so that it becomes certified. So it can be done. It can be done, and it has been done. And the ROOTS program has been running much longer. I was only involved for 8 years, but it's been running for, oh my God, for a long time. So and many cohorts of graduates now are in the schools as school teachers and even school principals now, and they are from the communities of the natives there. So it's very heartwarming to see that it can be done, and I dream that we can do something like that here too. I really do. I hope for our Orang Asli here that something like that can happen, that maybe some of our leaders here in Malaysia will have the courage to take on that responsibility to say, yes, let's do something different. And you know, maybe it's just a pilot in the beginning, yeah, but we make that pilot work, you know, and then maybe scale it up, maybe do it to more communities once the pilot works out. Who knows? I mean, these are just crazy thoughts of an individual.
Yeah, but no, these are wonderful, hopefully, you know, life-changing thoughts that hopefully will come to fruition. And I think you are trying to take some of those things that you learned and that you put into practice and trying to help the Orang Asli in Ulu Geruntum as well, right? You're trying to take some of those things from that program. And
myself and a few friends, we try. We do need more people to step up and try to, because there's more than one Orang Asli village. We're only helping 6 villages in Ulu Geruntum. Yeah. There's an entire country of Orang Asli. And I think we need to make more people aware, because I'm sure there are people out there who want to help, but don't realize that they can.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they don't quite know how they can fit into the puzzle, I suppose. You know, it seems like such a huge, you know, massive issue, right? And they don't know that there are actually small ways that everybody can actually help.
Yeah, start small. That's all I can say. Start small and be brave. Be brave.
Well, before I let you go, Roz, you know, you do have some hopes for the future, of course. And, you know, just before you go as well, maybe you can just let us know just about this current situation, about the durians. You were saying that you're looking for more volunteers. How can people actually get in touch? How can they actually, how can they actually volunteer and help?
Well, for the immediate during this particular season, because I think right now there's lots of durians and every day the Orang Asli are collecting between 500 to 800 durians per day.
Oh, wow.
But our pickup truck can only fit 500 durians. So that means there's a surplus of 200 to 300 durians that are potentially going to go to waste because we don't have any vehicles to go and get those durians from the Orang Asli and deliver them. So if there's anyone who has a vehicle or plural vehicles and are willing to be a part of this, like literally help us, right? Because we don't have drivers either, to step up and maybe contact us and we'll figure out whether, you know, we can do partial deliveries or something. Right. And it's not forever. It's not forever. This season will probably only go on until September. So that's in the immediate. But in the long run, We don't want to just do this 1 year and then that's it, right? And then we don't want to have to do this again next year. We want the orang asli to be able to do this for themselves. So while waiting for next year's durian, there's other things. The orang asli can sell petai, they can sell rambutan, they can sell, you know, a lot of other jungle products as well. But the main issue is how. And online direct sales seems to be working really well because there's a lot of Malaysians who want to help and the prices are reasonable. And you know, it gives them value for their money.
But it's all how do organically we do, grown, right?
Yeah, and it's grown organically. Absolutely, no pesticides. But how do we do that in a more effective way? I'm sure there are people out there who are already online business people who have, during the pandemic, learned how to sell things using whatever platforms. So if you guys are hearing this, please volunteer if you are interested to help. Help us figure out how to create ways that the orang asli can do that too. I mean, either they become suppliers and you guys sell it on your existing online business, or you help be a teacher, like I'm trying to teach the orang asli how to do stuff. So teach us how to do that. How do we sell using a proper online platform? Because right now we're just jerry-rigging manual spreadsheets. Oh my God, it's so time-consuming just taking or sale orders manually and manually trying to fulfill the sale deliveries. I'm sure there are better ways of doing it. And we are not experts, but we know there are many, many people out there who are much better at this than we are. If you're hearing this and if you feel the calling to volunteer to help, we would love to introduce you to the orang asli, and together maybe we can figure out how to get the orang asli to learn how to do it.
Okay. All right. Excellent. And
One last thing. None of this is going to work out if the orang asli have to keep riding their motorbikes down the mountain to find internet. We need internet up there. Oh my God, there is no phone line up there. Never mind electricity and running water. There's no electricity and running water in any of the houses in the upper village. And there's no phone line or internet all the way to the lowest village either. And so it's really sad that these people have to pay gas money to ride their motorbikes to go down the mountain to just find internet. And then finding internet means prepaid cards. And you know, I've also had to like donate money, 10 ringgit here, 10 minute ringgit there, because they run out of top-up cards, right? They run out of credit on their phone. So if there are any telco providers out there listening, please adopt this village and get them internet. You know, it's so sad. And it's not like they're very far, you know. It's only an hour's drive from Ipoh.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. And, you know, we talk so much about leaving no one behind. We talk about the SDGs, you know, all these things that we talk about. But let's actually do something to get that in action, right? To put that into action, all that words into action.
Yeah. And there's no point for them applying for any of those whatever government subsidies for internet or free internet, whatever that the government is giving out now, if there isn't even access to it. There's no tower. There's no telco tower up there. No signal can reach where they are. So we need that first.
Okay. All right. So I guess, okay, let's talk about the immediate ones. So if anybody's interested, just get in touch with you. What is the best way to do that, Ros, to get in touch with you and the rest of the volunteers?
I think I go by WhatsApp. So I'll give you my WhatsApp number. You can post it. I do check my WhatsApp almost 24/7. But just bear in mind, I still use my US WhatsApp number. So don't call. Just WhatsApp me. And then if we want to discuss further, then I will get on a local Malaysian phone line to call you. But do send me a text using WhatsApp and we'll find out what we can work on together.
Okay, excellent. I'll put that number in our podcast description. And then, you know, if anyone's interested, they can just hit there and search for your number and get in touch. Well, thank you so much, Roz, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Roz Hussain. She's an academic. We've been discussing, you know, issues facing the Orang Asli up in Ulu Guruntum in Perak. If you missed any part of today's interview, any previous Live and Learn interviews, just download the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.